I should tell you at the top of this, I'm an only child, so I'm guaranteed weird. I was raised by a single mom, and my dad picked the bottle over me, so comedian.
That's comedian Dan Soder in a nutshell, and this is The Last Laugh. I'm Matt Wilstein from The Daily Beast. Today on the podcast, I travel to New York to interview fellow only child Dan Soder, whose new stand-up special premieres this Saturday night on HBO. It's called Son of a Gary and includes some pretty dark stories about growing up with a single mother and mostly absent father. You might recognize Dan as Mafi from the Showtime series Billions, but in his heart, he is purely a stand-up comedian who performs regularly in New York City and co-hosts The Bonfire on Comedy Central's Sirius XM channel with his good friend Big J Okerson. One of Dan's other close friends happens to be Shane Gillis, who has been a regular guest on The Bonfire long before he gained infamy by getting fired by Saturday Night Live before he started. Dan has a lot of strong opinions about that situation, and he tells us all about it on today's episode. Maybe because he spends upwards of 8 hours a week speaking into a radio microphone, Dan was incredibly fun to talk to, and you are not going to want to miss today's show. But first, as always, please help us out by leaving a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Maybe you too have strong opinions you want to share. Oh, and if you happen to be listening on Stitcher, we could really use the help with some 5-star ratings and reviews there. Check it out and you'll see what I mean. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram at LastLaughPod. All right, let's get into it with Dan Soder.
It was unbelievable.
Who are some of the big people that you saw when you came to New York that you kind of looked up to or wanted to
I mean, it was just
with.
Insane. I remember Jim Norton was on a show at Stand Up New York, like my first week I was there, and just like watching him walk by me. Mm-hmm. As someone that grew up loving, Tough Crowd and that kind of, the Opie and Anthony years of, like, I got exposed to so many great comedians because of illegally downloaded Opie and Anthony episodes.
Yeah.
Louis C.K., Bill Burr, Patrice O'Neill. Dave Attell I learned through, like, you know, Insomniac and then his stand-up specials. But it was just crazy to see that. It was just crazy to know that you could go. I went to the Cellar one time and just bought a ticket, and I watched the lineup. It was like Geraldo, Patrice, Attell. It was like all these legends. Mike DiStefano.
Yeah.
Mike DiStefano. Sorry. Chris DiStefano and Mike DiStefano. I screw them up. but yeah, it was like I was watching. It just felt right.
Yeah. I mean, the Cellar is this, you know, sort of hallowed ground in New York now that, you know, it's a big deal to get up there. So how long before you, when you, after you got to New York, were you able to get up there?
Oh, I think it took me 4 years.
Yeah.
4 years of being in New York and kind of, I don't know. I was talking to someone about it. The Cellar used to be the place that it was the last check.
Mm-hmm.
You worked everywhere. And then if you were good enough, you got in at the Cellar.
There's nothing above that.
Yeah. And sadly enough, now there's people that work the Cellar that only work the Cellar.
They
start there and they, or they kind of, you know, they have little heat and bar shows that, and then they start there. And I'm not knocking them. Good for them. But it's just kind of, it's a different club than it was.
Yeah. Well, you had to put in your dues.
I didn't used to walk by it. Now people are comfortable that aren't past sitting down at the table and giving their opinion.
Yeah.
In my mind, that was like, I used to feel weird sitting at the bar.
Yeah.
And now there's like, I don't know, I think there's, people aren't afraid to be bold anymore, which is good for some people, negative for most.
Did you feel like you were afraid to be bold in those days? You still are?
Yeah, I still, not with my friends and stuff, but I just feel like, I don't know. People need to shut up more, I think, and that includes me.
It's kind of a funny thing for a comedian to say,
but it is. I think what's happening right now in comedy is there's an overexposure of comedians.
Mm-hmm. How does that manifest, or where do you see that makes you think that?
Social media and Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. You're seeing too much of the comedian. So then when they're on stage, you're kind of like, well, I know you.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, this is coming from a guy with a radio show.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, you're
well.
10 hours a week of,
yeah, we do,
of radio.
We do eight, and then we do eight Monday through Thursday, 6 to 8 p.m., Big J and I.
It's on the Bonfire. On Comedy Central Sirius.
Comedy Central Radio Sirius XM 95. It's the most fun I've ever had doing anything.
Yeah, but do you worry about overexposing yourself?
Honestly, in that situation, no, because Jay and I are just trying to be funny the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think overexposure comes for comedians in different ways. It's when you start seeing, like, whenever comedians get serious, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a dangerous territory for comedians to go, because then it's like, how do you go back to being silly?
I feel like that's definitely a divide of the many divides in comedy now, is people who are sort of in it just... funny is funny no matter what.
And that's my. I think that's the school I come from.
Yeah, and people who are like, there needs to be some deeper, you know, darker, more serious aspect to this.
I think they're one and the same.
Yeah.
With this HBO special, I have a bunch of dead dad jokes. I have a joke about murdering my grandmother, and they all stem from the fact that I'm afraid of those things, or I'm sad about those things. I think when people try to point out that they're being dark or serious, they're fucking corny.
Yeah.
I think they're fucking corny. I'm like, you're a dork. You're the person in school that got me in trouble for making people laugh in the classroom.
Yeah.
And I think that's what, those are the comedians that I love, are the people that are like, oh, this is the only thing I can do.
Mm-hmm.
I get fired for talking
jokes about something dark. Yeah.
That's why I think it's so weird about the cancel culture, because I'm like, you're firing people that would get fired everywhere else for every.
Yeah,
for
this,
all
is the,
of this
is the one job where you're not supposed to get fired for doing that stuff.
For you? Are you going to come in and work? You're not.
Yeah.
A lot of these people that are getting people fired, they don't want to do comedy. They don't want to put in the work. It's a lonely life.
Yeah.
It's I'm hypercritical of myself. You deal with substance abuse, you deal with depression, and then it's like all these, like, couch warriors, these people on their laptops that are like, he shouldn't do that. It's like, do you want to go work the Albany Funny Bone in December? Then shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
You don't want to put in the work.
Yeah. The thing about cancel culture that I've seen is that, you know, what the question, I guess, is whether people are actually getting canceled or whether people are giving those opinions online and
they're doing
basically
real harm.
Nothing's really happening.
They're doing real harm.
Yeah.
I know these people. I know the people that you're canceling.
Mm-hmm.
You're actually harming them.
When you think about people getting canceled, I mean, who do you feel like has actually gotten canceled? Because some of these
Shane
bigger
Gillis.
People. Shane Gillis has been a pretty regular guest on your show, right?
He's one
over
of my
the
good
years.
Friends.
One of your good friends.
I've known him for a long time. A long time. I've known him since he moved up from Philly.
Were you surprised when SNL hired him?
Yes. Yes, I was. Not because I think he's one of the funniest people out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was actually like a surprise hire, but it was one of those things where it was like, you know, he said some live shit.
Yeah.
And was trying to be funny and got buried. And then they found some old shit where he was just mad and talking into a microphone. And that's, you know. I don't know. I think that's a very interesting situation, because I think Shane understands why he got fired. I can't speak for Shane, but I'm friends with him.
Yeah.
And I'm not in this culture. I think there's a lot of people, you forget in the entertainment business, there's people that would rather protect their own hides or save their own career than be honest and truthful. And then you see that hide rot them.
Mm-hmm.
Where all of a sudden now they're pandering to people that they would have never pandered to in the beginning.
Yeah.
Or that has no business. You know what I mean? What happened with Shane is people that would never have seen his comedy saw the worst parts of his comedy.
Because he got this big spotlight.
Because he
on
got
him.
A big job.
Yeah.
And so they're like, what's the worst thing you've done?
Mm-hmm.
Because.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't see the best stuff that he's done when
he's
that
hilarious.
Happened. And I think most people.
And I hope I don't get in trouble for saying this, but I sat next to him when Andrew Yang called him after he got fired. And Andrew Yang was like, you're funny.
Yeah.
Like, I watched me and your wife.
That was an interesting thing, the way Andrew Yang decided to handle that, and was pretty gracious about it. And
very gracious about it. And I felt bad for Bowen Yang on SNL for getting this amazing opportunity, and then it's bogged down, you know, by this story of his new coworkers, a racist against Asians. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I don't know, man.
You obviously don't see him as a racist against Asians.
I don't. I don't think he's.
Yeah.
You know, and that'll probably get me canceled.
Well, no, I mean,
for saying that, I don't.
You
think
You know,
he's,
based on that one, if that's all you've seen is that one clip, or heard
also
that
if
one
you've
clip,
only seen that one clip, have you listened to the entire podcast? Yeah. Do you know the context of where that joke?
Well, I think
is
part of the problem there was they took down a lot of the stuff from the internet after.
It wasn't after they
got posted or all from YouTube, or a lot of it seemed to kind of disappear from
it was he when he when he, I hope I'm not out of pocket saying this, when he screen tested for SNL, he deleted his podcast.
Okay.
Because he was like, that was basically my open mic. Mm-hmm. I'm deleting it.
So it was before people, then I don't know how people, some people found it through
other
ways.
I know how people found it. Yeah. I know exactly how people found it. They weren't looking for it. Mm-hmm. And then there's other ways to do it.
Yeah.
Outrage is a cottage industry right now. Mm-hmm. There are journalists who are making money for outrage, and they're making a lot of money. CNN is an outrage, Nate, an outrage thing. Fox News, they're all the same. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The 24-hour news
cycle.
That's
what drives the clicks and drives viewers and all of it, yeah.
And unfortunately, that all that stuff is tied to capitalism. Mm-hmm. So there's money in there.
Yeah.
So people are making money. So there's people right now that are actively going after clowns when our planet is burning and there's legitimate criminal activity in our government.
Yeah.
And they're worried about the clowns. Mm-hmm. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
Because there's just a thing that I've seen with when my friends outside of Shane, when I've seen other Michael Che, I've seen other people get attacked publicly.
Yep.
There's a thing to always remember that we don't forget who did that. So in 10 years, when they're trying to write a cooking book, and they're like, everything's fine. It's like, no. Yeah. You tried to ruin people's lives.
Yeah.
And the retraction, as you know, is never as large as the accusation.
Right.
So when someone fucks up, they never make it as loud as when they were like, that person's a fucking murderer. And you know what I mean?
Well, what do you think of the argument that, you know, comedians have the right to joke about whatever they want, but audiences have the right to complain about whatever they want?
100%. 100%. And I also believe in the line the great Jay-Z said, either love me or leave me alone.
Yeah.
You could not like something and move on. I understand why people are upset about Shane.
Yeah.
That clip, you hear that clip, that's you're like, what the fuck is this? And there also is, we're in such a busy kind of society that people don't want to go listen to the full episode. Mm-hmm. And they don't want to be like, well, he was doing a character voice of a guy that didn't understand Chinatown. Mm-hmm. Should he have used that word? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
But it's also like you're going to punish him for a joke. Like, it's a weird gray area. Yeah. But I absolutely believe that, if you don't like something, you shouldn't have to listen to it.
How do you think the whole thing reflected on SNL? I mean,
I think it looked really bad for SNL.
Yeah. So I want to talk about your special because I got to see an early cut of it.
Oh, shit.
And,
okay.
And really enjoyed it.
Oh, thanks, man.
Son of a Gary.
Yeah.
On HBO. And I think this podcast will come out kind of right before it airs on HBO.
Well, maybe HBO pulls it because of this podcast.
Oh, well, let's hope not.
He said anything other than... I just love comedy, and the opportunity to do this HBO special was so fucking big for me.
Yeah.
And
it's huge. I mean, HBO still holds a very, even though Netflix has kind of taken over in some degrees, I feel like HBO, because they only release, 10 or so specials a year, it does make it special.
Yeah.
So is that part of what made you excited to go there?
And
because you've worked with, you did an hour with Comedy Central.
Yeah.
You did the stand-ups, which is a half hour on Netflix.
Which was awesome.
And now you're doing the hour on HBO.
Yeah, it's been fun. All three have been fun experiences. But this was like the first one that felt, Comedy Central Hour felt major. And then it kind of came out and the business model had evolved past Comedy Central's, we're going to air it
twice. That's what I've heard from people. So I just had Dion Cole on the show recently who had the exact same thing. He did a Comedy Central Hour. And then
the stand-ups,
and then he did a Netflix special.
And then he did a Netflix hour.
And so it's the same kind of trajectory.
Netflix did that on purpose.
Yeah.
Netflix got, if you look at the stand-ups.
Yeah, it's all.
It's Nate Bargatze, Dion Cole, Nikki Glaser, Beth Stelling, Fortune Feimster, and myself. Four out of those, me, Dion, Nate, and Nikki all did hours on Comedy Central.
Yep.
And then they were like, hey, do you want people to see your comedy?
Mm-hmm.
Comedy Central does a lot of great things. I love doing the Bonfire on their radio station. I think South Park's one of my favorite shows of all time. It kind of feels like stand-up is to Comedy Central what music is to MTV.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Which, by the way, I should amend that statement and say Comedy Central does a great job with the half hours, and they pick great new comics. Mia Jackson, Tom Picard, Norrie Davis. There's a lot of great people that are putting out half hours.
But you still have to ask whether people are seeing them.
Where are they streaming them?
Yeah.
You tell me people are at home Friday night from 11 to midnight to watch stand-up?
yeah.
I don't really know if they are.
I mean, I would guess that the half hour on the stand-ups did more for your career than the hour on the on Comedy Central.
No one knows I did an hour.
Yeah.
I poured my ass into that thing. No one knows I did an hour on Comedy Central. I still get tweets where people are like, dude, I searched you on iTunes and you have a whole hour. And you're like, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is what HBO felt so special, because HBO does do the old model.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday, December 7th at 10 p.m. You can mm-hmm. watch the special, but then it just lives forever on HBO Go, HBO Now, mm-hmm. HBO. There's going to be a lot more accessibility.
Yeah.
Comedians need accessibility.
Mm-hmm.
It helps. I mean, I know I'm bitching about, like, comedy's never been better.
Yeah.
It's never been better. No, you can choose. That's the reason I say either love it or leave it alone.
Mm-hmm.
You have so many choices.
Yeah.
If you think a guy like Shane Gillis is hilarious, you can go into Shane Gillis and go mm-hmm. download it, go get a ton of them.
Yeah. You don't need him to be on SNL to see him necessarily.
Not at all.
Yeah.
SNL is similar, in a lot of ways, it's similar to the old model of Comedy Central.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
SNL would be like, who's this incredible stand-up comedian? Put him on national television. Now everyone knows, which, listen, it still does work.
Yeah.
Pete Davidson and Che. There's mm-hmm. a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
There's stand-ups. Chris Redd. A lot of great stand-ups that have gotten put over being on SNL. It's not necessary anymore. Yeah.
Did you ever audition for SNL?
Yeah, twice.
Yeah.
Screen tested twice. And
how did that go for you?
First one was so nervous and, it was like insane. You like screen test and you're like, oh, fuck, there's Lorne Michaels.
Yeah.
It was one of those things where I didn't think I wanted it,
mm-hmm.
auditioned, got close, wanted it, then didn't get it. And you're like, why am I heartbroken now?
Yeah.
Why the fuck am I? But then, man, listen, stand-up is a career of no's.
Mm-hmm.
Of no's. And, like, you look at even what we were talking about with cancel culture.
Mm-hmm.
You're not really canceling. Because, by the way, they're still going to comedy clubs.
Yeah.
Because a lot
that was kind of my point, is anyone actually getting canceled?
And to that extent, you're right.
Yeah.
No. Because they're still working.
Yeah.
Louis's still working.
Yeah.
Shane will be fine. And, by the way, I'm not surprised if in 5 years everyone's back being like, Louis's hilarious, you know? Like, mm-hmm. there's, I would even say less than that. I would say the tides.
Well, he's on tour right now.
But I'm saying, as far as the
culture,
general,
the larger culture,
I don't know if he wants that anymore.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, don't be surprised.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a wrestling fan.
Yeah.
People go from babyface to heel and mm-hmm. heel back to babyface. Mm-hmm. all the fucking time.
Yeah.
And I don't ever lose that.
Yeah. With Louis, I think it's a question of what it would take to change for that to happen.
I mean, I think he drops a great special, and I think it moves more people than you would think.
Yeah, to me, I think he would have to drop a great special that, in some way, even if it's comedically, addresses
yes
what he's been through
100%.
Which he hasn't really done, as far as I can tell.
Started to
yeah.
I don't know his act, but
yeah.
From what I've seen, started to
yeah,
and it's. Yeah, it's going to be in an odd place, because the 24-hour news cycle moves so fast that one person can go in a 360 so fast that you might not even...
Yeah.
There's people that, like, don't even know. With the Shane thing, it was hilarious, because he had a bunch of texts of, like, oh, my God, congratulations, it's so cool. And the next text was like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry.
Yeah,
or, like,
yeah.
you know.
Because it all happened within about 3 days.
It happened in a day.
Yeah.
But it's... Back to our original point of, like, what you need for stand-up, I don't think anyone knows the recipe,
mm-hmm.
because I think some people move so fast, and some people it's like you do a half hour. Dion Cole, one of the funniest guys working now, and now he's finally with the Netflix hour.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Nate Bargatze.
Yeah.
I've known Nate 90% of my career.
Yeah.
He's one of my oldest friends. Always been one of the funniest comedians I've known.
Yeah, he's hilarious.
Hilarious. And watching him do 6 Conans, fucking 15 Tonight shows, however many mm-hmm. done a half hour. He's just bam, 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 killing every time.
Yeah.
Killing, killing, killing. And you're like, all right. And I watched his frustration. Why am I not moving tickets? Why mm-hmm. is it not going? And then we both do the stand-ups, and he, boom, selling out clubs.
Yeah.
I'm not moving to Bonfire helps me move tickets.
Yeah. I talked to Nate about it, and he said that he thinks because he was first on the six, that made the difference.
Do you want to hear my agent's explanation? We have the same agent. My agent's explanation was, hey, man, when people read a book, they always read chapter 1, but they don't get to chapter 6 all the time. And you're like, did you just call me? I am chapter 6, but are you saying I'm a chapter 6?
Yeah.
I didn't give a shit, because it was also, I realized how far stretching streaming is.
Yeah. Well, it's also like it's 2 years ago or whatever. People are still watching it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, still. What's great is sometimes the Netflix special leads people back to the Comedy Central hour.
Right.
If Comedy Central worked a deal out with Hulu like they used to have,
yeah,
where you could just stream half hours, you would benefit so many comedians and comedy fans.
Yeah.
I want to watch the old Ted Alexandro or Nick DiPaolo or the old Dave Attell.
Yeah, they should be way more accessible than they are.
Way more accessible than they are.
Yep.
And it's pretty, but HBO, that was a thing where it's like, oh man, there's accessibility. And they fucking give a shit. I've never seen someone that I've worked with. Netflix was cool, and they're professional. Comedy Central's very professional and very cool. HBO was like, what do you need to make this? What do you want to make this? And it was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
This is great. Now I just hope people like it.
Yeah. What did you tell them? What did you want to make it? What did you want it to be?
I wanted to do Edinburgh. I wanted to do Edinburgh, the Fringe Festival.
Yeah.
I wanted to go and run it for a month. Because there's jokes about my dad that I think I didn't have worked out.
So that you said there's a lot of material about your dad who passed away. And you, I mean, that's the kind of thing where, does it take a while for you to be able to think about a way to make that funny? Or how do you go about that?
I've always joked around about it. So for me, it's not how do you make other people not be sensitive.
Yeah.
And I think you could see that in the joke because I try to explain, like, people with dead parents don't mind making fun of it.
Yeah.
Especially their own dead parents.
Yeah.
Like, whatever, they're dead. Takes a little bit unless you're a sociopath. You're not, I mean, I don't know. I was making fun of it pretty fast because I think a lot of comedians react like that. That instead of being sad, we'd rather be funny. There's like a thing where you're like, I need to make fun of this. I need to break the tension. But it took me a while because those jokes would bomb.
Yeah.
I'd be like, my dad drank himself to death, and everyone's like, oh, fuck.
I love doing dead dad jokes. My dad's dead. People with dead dads love dead dad jokes. You know who doesn't like dead dad jokes, surprisingly? People with living dads. Greedy assholes. You're like, yeah, you're talking about my papa. Like, shut up. Shut up. It's fucking fine.
Well, in Edinburgh is interesting too because there are some more serious, like, one-person shows happening there.
The best advice I got for Fringe Festival was I was about to make my hour more of a sad thought piece, you know?
Yeah, which goes against what you were saying before, kind of.
Totally goes against it. But I thought I was intimidated by Fringe, and I was intimidated, like, okay, I always want to do a good job.
Yeah.
It's also something you got to realize about comedians. We all want to be liked.
Yeah.
We're not on stage just because it's fucking there.
Yeah.
We're on stage because we're like, please like these jokes. Every joke I've ever written, I've never been like, that's so funny. I'm always like, is this funny?
Yeah.
And that's why you go in front of a crowd. You're like, is this funny?
Mm-hmm.
It might not be. There's jokes I've had that are like, no, that's not funny. There's jokes I've had that are like, no, that's not funny. And then a year later, you're like, oh, I found out if you just switch two words, it's hilarious.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It is. It's what it is. I mean, that's... Ask anyone with a linguistics degree.
That's why you have to go up so many times. And
it's also why you fail. It's also why when someone like Shane, you find a thing he was doing. You know, that was a year ago. That's not a good example. But his older stuff that they used when they pulled up, it's like, yeah, man, there's.
Yeah, or, you know, people like Kevin Hart when they were pulling. That was like decade-old stuff.
Yeah, and they've done it to everyone. Trevor Noah, they did it. They do it to every new SNL hire.
Yep.
Anthony Jeselnik had that really funny tweet where he was like, I love this time of year where we dig up a young comedian's past to ruin the best thing they've ever had. But it is a thing where you have to fail and fail and fail. And so I was going to Fringe and I didn't want to fail. And I was like, this is going to, you know, and I was walking from the stand to the Comedy Cellar with Ari Shaffir. And Ari was like, you got to do your jokes.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Do your jokes, man. Like, just go over there and do an hour. And I was like, yeah, but they don't like that over there. He goes, that's what the fucking industry tells you. The audience, they're going to want that. They're going to want you to be funny.
Especially if they're seeing serious shit all day. And
all
then,
day.
Yeah.
All day. And what it ended up giving me is this opportunity to go to Scotland and just be like, hey, these are jokes. These are all jokes. My dad's dead, but it's funny. And here's how it's funny. And then by the time I got back, I was like, that really helped. It helped more than anything. Figure it out.
And then, so then that, so you work out the show in Edinburgh, and then once you're, you know, how do you know it's sort of ready to tape as the special, and how do you?
When I came back from Edinburgh, I was like, oh, Yeah, we're ready to go. I mean, I did 5 weeks on the road, and I think that was a little too much.
Yeah.
I was, by the time I was taping, I was almost itchy. I was like, let's just go. Let's go.
But,
I even forgot tags.
Yeah.
I forgot tags. I had I have a bunch of fucking punchlines. I have two punchlines that I forgot that aren't in the special. Mm-hmm. I'm going from here to edit, and I'm like mad. I woke up. The girl I was dating thought I was a complete psycho because I just woke up and I was like, oh, I forgot a tag. And she was like, what? I was like, I forgot a tag in the Jimmy Buffett joke. I had a whole thing. And someone was like, it's all right, man. But you're like, no, it's too specific. It had to go in that joke.
Do you want to share them totally out of context now so that people then listen to the special? They'll know.
I think it just explains. I explain who. So I was doing. I do a joke in the special about my dad drank himself to death, but he was a Jimmy Buffett fan, so it's okay. But then in the UK, they don't really know who Jimmy Buffett is.
Yeah.
So I explained, I was like, the tag that I missed was I was like, no, he's an American singer-songwriter that writes Caribbean music for alcoholic white people. He's the Pied Piper of kidney failure. And I just wanted that in there so bad.
And you just forgot in the moment?
Yeah, just blew it.
Well, now people have to listen to this podcast to hear
the full joke. The full spectrum. You have to really go see it. That entire process and this entire process of just like getting ready to release it, it feels weird with the words HBO attached to it.
Does it makes it feel like a bigger deal?
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
Coming up, Dan talks about how it felt when his friend Michelle Wolf got thrown under the bus after hosting the White House Correspondents' Dinner. This episode of The Last Laugh is brought to you by Skylight Frame. The holidays are just around the corner. How's your holiday shopping going? I know it's not always easy to find the perfect gift for the people in your life, and that's why I want you to check out Skylight Frame. Skylight Frame is a photo frame you can update instantly by email from anywhere. It sets up in under 60 seconds. Just plug in, use the touchscreen to connect your wireless network, and enjoy. Sending photos to Skylight is effortless. Everyone in the family can just email them to your personal Skylight email address and they'll pop up in seconds. It is great for keeping the family close and connected, especially those who live far away. It has a black frame and white mat, so it looks just like a real photo frame that adds a beautiful touch to your home. Skylight Frame has a gorgeous 10-inch touchscreen. You can swipe through photos with your finger and even tap to thank the person who sent a photo. And it's 100% satisfaction guaranteed. If you don't love your Skylight, they'll offer you a full refund. And you can preload it with your favorite photos for a personalized gift. Import pictures of you and the special person in your life that they didn't even know you had. I can think of a bunch of people in my life who would love a Skylight Frame, including a good friend who's about to have a baby and is going to need somewhere to display all of the new photos they will constantly be taking. Now, as a special holiday offer, you can get $10 off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com and enter code LAUGH. That's right, to get $10 off your purchase of a Skylight Frame, just go to skylightframe.com and enter code LAUGH. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com, promo code LAUGH.
Do you, in terms of, you know, back to cancel culture stuff, how much do you worry about that stuff personally? Like, do you think about, oh, I don't know, should I say this? Is it going to get me in trouble? Is it?
I look at it like cancer. Mm-hmm. If I'm going to get it, I'm going to get it.
Yeah. You're not going to.
I'm not smoking.
Yeah.
But I use my cell phone a lot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's a good analogy.
I think that's the way every comedian should look at it. Mm-hmm. And then if you get cancer, you deal with it and you fight it.
And what kind of conversations do you feel like you have with, you know, comedians, whether it's someone like Shane or someone like Michael Che, you know, or anyone who
Wolf,
is going through
Wolf
this?
Wolf got canceled after the White House Correspondents'
Michelle
Dinner.
Wolf, yeah.
Let's not forget that. Let's not forget who's gone after everybody. Mm-hmm. These canceled motherfuckers like to go after everybody. So stop. And then
she got a lot of praise, too, but yeah.
She didn't. Surprisingly, no, she didn't. As someone that's close to Michelle, as someone that's very close to Michelle and knew those jokes and had talked to her on the phone several times, watching the backlash from the left was more insulting than watching the death threats from the right.
There were some, especially like that night.
Joe Scarsboro, that whole show, that needs to be called out. The New York Times called her out for an inaccurate joke, where they said that she criticized Sarah Huckabee Sanders' looks. The joke was Sarah Huckabee Sanders burns the facts down to ash and uses the ash to make a lovely smoky eye.
Yeah.
And fucking New York Times.
It was kind of complimentary towards her looks, actually.
You want to know why they did that?
Why?
Because a bit that Michelle and I talked out in the thing, and I know exactly which joke pissed off the New York Times and the left media, or the media on the left that went after her, because media on the right buried her, tried to bury her.
Yeah.
Media on the left went after her because Michelle called out the fact that everyone is profiting off Trump's presidency in the media.
Mm-hmm.
CNN is making more money than they've ever made. MSNBC is making more money than they've ever made. And they heard that and were like, fuck.
Yeah.
We got to take her down a notch. She made fun of another woman's looks. Insane.
Yeah.
Don't ever forget that they did that.
Yeah.
Because that's some yellow journalism. It's fucking straight up bullshit. These are my friends. That's why I say when it affects people.
Yeah.
I'm the one that's on the phone with them. I'm upset because they're upset because these people are taking shit out of context and really genuinely hurting people that I care about.
Yeah. What do you think is the, is there even an answer to it at this point, or is it just sort of part of being a comedian?
It's all bullshit.
Yeah.
Just know that. Comics.
Is it just ignore? Is it just ignoring it? Is that the sort of
Well, outsiders will always be like, comedians close ranks. And they're like, yeah, there's a reason for that. Because you motherfuckers take shit out of context. So we got to close ranks.
Yeah.
My favorite thing is just like that the comedy community takes care of each other in a way that Joe List said that to me very, very early on in comedy. He said, no one will get you more work or put you on more shows than other comedians.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great. And that's been like a North Star for me.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, I love comedy. I love being around comedians. I don't necessarily agree with everything they do, but I will, for the most part, always take their back. So when I see a comedian undercut, when a comic gets really big, sometimes what they'll do is they'll undercut comedians or cap them.
Mm-hmm.
And be like, you can no longer make jokes about this because they're up there.
Yeah.
So they go, no jokes about this. And it's like, well, you got to come back down. And then now we're going to make sure that you remember that you put that cap on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not good to ever do that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of comedians whose jokes I don't agree with. I flat out don't like some comedians' acts.
Yeah.
But I'll always get their back because I know they're trying. It's like what we were talking about. You go and you fail so much. The space to fail. What's weird, man, is I remember growing up, I remember adults would always use the phrase, I don't care for it. If they didn't like something.
Yeah.
They'd be like, I don't care for that.
Yeah.
And that just kind of knew of a way of like, I don't like this. I'm not going to fuck with it.
Yeah.
And everyone would be like, okay.
That's kind of gone.
Completely gone.
Yeah.
Completely gone. If I hear something and I don't like it, a band, not really for me.
Yeah.
If I try a dish at a restaurant, I don't like it. Not really for me. I had the risotto at this restaurant in New York. I got through like three bites and I was like, this isn't it.
Yeah.
And immediately the person I was with was like, send it back. Get something you like. Well, I've already ate a third of it. No. I just don't like it.
Yeah.
I'm not mad about it. Mm-hmm. I just know.
You're not going to cause
I'm not going to get the waiter fired. Yeah. I'm not going to fucking ask the restaurant to apologize. I'm just not going to order that dish when I come back here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think comedy. Listen, a lot of comedy, we use the premises to get you to pay attention, and then we can trick you into getting the joke off.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're looking to do.
Yeah.
Jabs and boxing set up hooks. Mm-hmm. If you come out and throw hooks, no one's going to be hit by the punch.
Yeah.
It's a setup. It's a dance. You give a premise, you try to fake people out, and then you go another way to where it's funny, where it relieves the pressure. It's really a fun and hard thing to do, but it's a fun thing. It's like a puzzle every time. It's weird if someone dumped out a puzzle and you started fixing the puzzle and they're like, I don't like this. And they just cleared it off. And you're like, I wasn't even done with the puzzle. I was close to figuring out the puzzle. And they're like, you went with corner pieces first. And you're like, that's how I solve puzzles. I don't know if that's a good analogy, but it feels, how I feel sometimes.
Yeah.
And
so people are jumping all over you or anyone before you've really finished or put out what you're trying to say.
For sure. Yeah, I don't know, man. I comedy is for like broken, weird idiots.
Mm-hmm.
that's how I describe myself. So I think it's weird. It's like it's a perfect fit.
Mm-hmm.
It's a perfect fit for people that just want to be silly. And I always got in trouble for talking shit. Mm-hmm. Not like talking shit, like trying to fight people, but like making fun of situations. Mm-hmm. And then that's when you asked, like, what is it like? I moved to New York and I was like, oh, these are all the other people.
Yeah. You found your people.
Found my people. You're like, oh, you got kicked out. And I'm talking about some of the people I hang out with came up from such different backgrounds and were so similar that you're just like, oh, this is, you know, you got Michelle Wolf, who's from Hershey, Pennsylvania, and Shane Gillis, who's from Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania. And then, like, I'm from Denver. And then we're just friends with Che, who's from the Lower East Side in New York City. You know, it's like all these people. But then you get us together, and you're like, oh, did you guys grow up together? Because you guys all have similar sensibilities, or you're laughing about the same shit.
Yeah.
And that's what I like about comedy.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like, if I could say this in a, you know, I know I'm a white guy or whatever, but I think it's got to be harder for people that aren't straight white men.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine how much harder it is.
Yeah.
But what I've noticed about comedy is it's been gentrified by people that aren't comedy fans.
Mm-hmm.
So because of the popularity of comedy, someone that normally would have been like, I don't really care for stand-up.
Yeah.
You have to go to a club. I don't really care for that. Now they're like, oh, everyone likes comedy. Well, let me go watch comedy. And then they don't like it. And then they're like, this is bullshit. And you're like, yeah, well, you weren't supposed to be here anyways.
Yeah, it's like
when all the
because
white...
Because it's gotten so popular,
yeah.
it's gotten more scrutiny, or it's gotten more,
It basically became what, like, you know, kind of like, in a weird way, it felt like when all those white women were calling the cops on black barbecues or black people. You're kind of like, hey, this is our fun.
Yeah.
Like, comics are over here having fun.
Yeah.
We're not going to call the police on each other.
Mm-hmm.
But then someone else will be like, they were saying this. And you're like, yeah, shut up. None of us are mad about that. What are you?
Let us have our fun over here.
Yeah. It feels kind of weird. And I think inevitably we won't see a pop of a comedy balloon like we did in the 80s and early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
I think eventually what will happen is people will get bored of stand-up because they'll realize how hard the work is and how much time you have to put in.
Mm-hmm.
And once they realize it's not just a quick grab for Instagram followers, they'll leave it while also shit-talking it.
Yeah.
They'll leave and they'll be like, it was a toxic world. Mark my words.
Yeah.
In 5 years, you'll hear a lot of people that were futzing around with stand-up being like, it's not a dark world. It's a bunch of silly boys and girls having fun.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really weird to see that because it's like, have you ever had something taken too seriously where you're like, you don't even think it's that big of a deal?
Yeah, and then everyone else is taking it too seriously.
That's how comedy feels right now.
Yeah.
Everyone's taking it far too seriously. You're like, don't worry, guys. The earth is burning.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of the premise of this show is taking comedy too seriously.
Yeah.
But yeah.
No, but I think
I see what you mean.
You can look at comedy critically and not take it serious.
Right.
I think you can
appreciate it.
100%.
Yeah.
I think the only reason there is a podcast like this is because you appreciate comedy.
Yeah.
You sat and watched my hour. There's people that are criticizing me that will watch the trailer and not watch the hour.
Yeah.
So I don't give a fuck about them. You know, I think something that I've really dealt with my whole life is being an only child and being raised by a single mom who just worked all the time and I was just alone.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad didn't want to be in my life. So you have this thing where you're like, I want people to like me because I felt like no one liked me when I was a kid. I felt like no one wanted to hang out with me. I was just by myself all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like this weird thing where I've had to deal with like, oh, I want everyone to like me. And now in my 30s, I've realized like, I don't need everyone to like me. In fact, it's very dangerous to want that.
Yeah.
Pull that back.
Mm-hmm.
When people come up to me and they know me from Billions, they don't know me.
Yeah.
Well,
that's a character that you play on a show.
Please tell that to a lot of the finance bros that walk up and stick their sweatered vest fingers in my face.
That's hilarious.
But what
do they say?
Mufee! Hey, Mufee! Billions! The show is so smart. How are these idiots watching such a smart show?
I don't think they're getting the same thing out of it that other people are.
Definitely don't think they are. But if someone walks up to me and they're like, hey, man, I listen to The Bonfire, you know me.
Yeah.
You know my sensibility.
Mm-hmm. Coming up next, Dan discusses the effect that working with gender non-binary actor Asia Kate Dillon on Billions has had on him. This episode of The Last Laugh is brought to you by, you guessed it, my favorite CBD gum, Euphoric. If you listen to this show, you know that comedians can be very anxious. They could probably use some euphoric. The entire CBD industry is talking about this innovative, patented hemp oil-infused chewing gum. What makes euphoric so special? Euphoric hemp oil-infused chewing gum is not your average gum. In fact, it's an innovative, patented delivery system. What makes this gum so innovative, you ask? Euphoric combines powerful chewing benefits with the heavily researched benefits of a full-spectrum hemp oil, which is rich in naturally occurring phytocannabinoids, including CBD. As a chewing gum, Euphoric brings more innovation with its patented delivery system that allows all the action to happen in the mouth. The long-lasting mint flavor and the consistency make it possible to chew it longer, which increases absorption in the mouth. In fact, Euphoric hemp oil-infused chewing gum has the best absorption rate on the market, 84%. That's 50% greater than other products that must be digested. Euphoric gum, however, keeps the hemp oil in the mouth longer, where it is absorbed without ever passing through the digestive system. Plus, the simple act of chewing has scientifically been shown to help improve memory, cognitive function, and oral health, and even reduce anxiety. That's why Euphoric is the best gum you'll ever chew. Euphoric is legal in all 50 states, it's gluten-free, sugar-free, non-GMO, and even supports dental health because it contains xylitol. Want to see what all the Euphoric fuss is about? Right now, our listeners get free shipping with their order when you visit lovethisgum.com. This is a special podcast exclusive, and when you support our sponsors, you support our show. Just go to lovethisgum.com to get free shipping, plus an additional bonus discount on select offers. That's lovethisgum.com. What I want to do now before we end is just run through a couple of things that we didn't get to talk about see if there's sort of a memory or a story that, sure. that jumps out. What do you remember about your late night stand-up debut?
I remember drinking a beer in the shower at Nate Bargatze's apartment in Los Angeles.
This was on Conan?
This was Conan. Yeah. This was January 6th or 7th, 2013. Mm-hmm. It was the night of the national championship game between Alabama and Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. And Nate had moved from New York to Nashville to have his daughter Harper. And then they moved from Nashville to Los Angeles and got a townhouse. Mm-hmm. And I was doing Conan probably like a month after they moved in mm-hmm. to their townhouse. And I stayed at their house. Harper was maybe 6 months old. It was great. We had fun. We were drinking beers. And then I remember the day of, I was so nervous that Nate and I had a beer on his patio. And then I took it with me to the bathroom to shower. Mm-hmm. We went to Conan. Nate had done Conan like fucking, he knew everyone. He like knew the producers. He knew everyone there. That helped me so much because it was like going with your big brother to work. Mm-hmm. And we sat in a green room. They found an Xbox 360. And my favorite video game of all time is NCAA college football. And Nate and I played Alabama, Notre Dame. JP Buck, who works at Conan, mm-hmm. is one of my favorite people in comedy. As a human being, as a professional, he just gets it. Mm-hmm. You rarely see people on that side.
Is he a writer or he's a...
He's a booker for Conan.
Booker,
He's a producer, booker. He's the shit. JP Buck is the shit. I'll go to war for JP Buck any day.
Well, they have a lot of good comedians on the show, so...
He knows comedy. He knows it very well. And so he kind of saw that we were just... And it was just me, JP, and Nate hanging out. I had a coffee. Super nervous. I went. You do the run-through or whatever, and I'll never forget standing behind the curtain... Looking down at my feet, very nervous, and I just hear Nate's voice somewhere behind me go, "You just gonna look at your feet the whole time?" And I look over, and it's him and JP going around to watch my set.
Yeah.
But as I'm watching them, the curtains open up. And I was like, "Ah!" And it just took me out of my head.
Yeah.
And I walked out and did the set. And you black out. Yeah. I've asked a lot of comics about this. I think I talked to Joe List about his Letterman. I talked to Nate about his first Conan. You don't... really remember it.
Yeah, it goes by pretty fast.
It's kind of like, it's kind of like a fist fight. You're just kind of like, I think I'm doing the right thing. Let's hope this works. But it got, and then it was over. And then I was just talking to Conan, and I was like, man, he really is tall. I was raised by a single mom, which basically meant I ruined most of the 80s for her. I didn't know what dating was. It was 5 when my mom started dating.
Some guy would come over, I'd be like, cool, a new roommate. Don't touch my stuff. By the time I was 7, I was like a grizzled veteran. I was the one answering the door, smoking a Winston. Just all confident, like, what's up, chief? You here for the old lady? Right on. Quick secret, you buy me a Ninja Turtle toy, I'll go get lost in that garage for an hour.
And then that's where you trust comedians.
Mm-hmm.
Because Nate was like, it was great.
Yeah.
He was like, it was really great. And that's how I felt about Son of Gary when I got off stage.
Yeah.
I looked to Wolf and Big J.
Mm-hmm.
And Shane and Nate, who are all there,
mm-hmm.
and you give them that, like, was that all right? And
yeah.
They're like, yeah, you got it. And you're like, yeah. You sure? And you still don't know.
Yeah.
After a special.
Would they tell you if it wasn't? You yeah. hope they would.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they would. I think I have enough faith in my yeah. friends that they would. But I feel like after you tape a special, they should wrap an army blanket around you.
Yeah.
Because you're just kind of like.
Like a marathon.
Yeah, you're just like, yeah, get one of those shiny silver blankets. And you're just like, this is
yeah.
all right.
Yeah.
I need Gatorade. but that's what I remember about my first late night.
Your first film credit, at least on IMDb, yeah. is Dumpster Guy yeah. in Trainwreck with
Shout
Amy
out
Schumer.
Amy Schumer for giving me the coolest IMDb title.
What do you remember about that experience?
I remember it was supposed to be someone else, and he couldn't get his Canadian paperwork done.
Oh, yeah.
And so Amy called me and was like, hey, do you want to be in my movie? And I was like, yeah, what's up? She's like, we have to make out next to a dumpster. And I was like, all right. And it was easy. It was a one-day shoot. I just missed the scene where they filmed it with Marv Albert, LeBron James, and Chris Everett. So there was like a bunch of like famous, legendary athletes.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, all right. Let's go make out in this alley. But yeah, I remember the process was the first big budget anything I've been
and
on.
And you knew her from comedy, but also from Inside Amy Schumer you worked on too, right?
Yeah, I knew Amy from comedy. I knew yeah. Amy from coming up doing stand-up. And she took care of a lot of comedians on Inside Amy. She gave a lot of people acting work
yeah.
on Inside Amy that hadn't had it before, including mm-hmm. myself. That,
yeah.
that was a big thing.
Yeah.
Really, she put me in a couple sketches and... As the seasons went on, she kind of gave me bigger sketches, and yeah, it was fucking great, man. That Inside Amy crew was super awesome.
Yeah. So we talked a little bit about Billions, but I think there is this, like, I think there's people who obviously know you from comedy, and there's a totally other group of people that know you from Billions.
Yeah, we don't worry about them. I mean, those that find us, hello and you're yeah. welcome, but we're, you know. Yeah.
Well, I think you're great on the show.
Thanks.
I think, and it's a really interesting evolution of that show, and your character has become bigger over the years.
It's crazy. Yeah. They've been very,
like,
very, very nice.
Do you like me. Doing it? I mean, it
Love
is.
Love doing it.
Yeah.
I think it's a really cool thing to do, and I think it's a really cool learning opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the only opportunity I get to be around people like Damian Lewis, David Costable, Asia Kate Dillon, Maggie Siff, mm-hmm. Daniel K. Isaac, Kelly O'Coin. Just like people that I watch act, and I'm like, you're a fucking actor.
Yeah.
Like they can act. And those are the people I ask questions to.
Yeah.
Kind of like comedians. It's mm-hmm. like, I tell them, like, I'm a comic trying to learn how to act. Please give me notes. Mm-hmm. Give me any advice you can. And
yeah.
They've all been so great. So great and so supportive. I've worked a lot with Asia, and they are so supportive that it is amazing.
Yeah.
Very easy to work with.
Mm-hmm.
Very easy to work with someone that is that supportive.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about Asia Kate Dillon is gender non-binary
yeah.
And has been a big activist in that space.
For sure.
What has working with them made you think differently about gender issues and all that kind of stuff?
I always feel I've always felt like you don't know what a person is going through.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can help that person go through whatever they're going through, whether it be realizing who they are as a total person, you should help out. I don't mm-hmm. think you should be a dick.
Yeah.
Don't be a dick. Don't ever be a dick. And I see with Asia that they their pronouns are there and them.
Mm-hmm.
And I respect that.
Yeah.
And I respect them. And mm-hmm. so there's been directors that don't pick up on it or don't
have trouble with it.
Or have trouble with it.
Yeah.
And there's a very easy ways to be like, well, are they? So when they walk in, and they're like, oh, when they walk in,
mm-hmm.
and they pick up on it.
Yeah. I think the show's been pretty educational, too, for people, I think.
Yeah, I think.
For viewers, I mean.
And
yeah.
Brian Koppelman and David Levine are two of the smartest people I've ever met in my life, but they're also two of the best people I've ever met in my life. And
mm-hmm.
they really give a shit. And I've talked to a lot of people on set that say that this working environment isn't normal for a show this mm-hmm. large.
yeah,
how easy it is and how everyone gives a shit about each other and everyone's super supportive. Very, very supportive. We just did the first table read. We're back filming now.
This is season five.
But immediately, hugs and everyone's it's fucking cool, man. And it's cool, and I think a lot of the credit goes to not only Brian and David, but the producers and the top of show.
Mm-hmm.
Damian, Maggie, Paul, Condola, they all kind of set a tone that people like me are, I'm a smartass. I'm a class clown. You know, I break tension. There's not a lot of tension to break.
Yeah.
Everyone's super fucking supportive.
Yeah, that's great.
And really good people. Mm-hmm. And I've been very lucky to work on that show.
Yeah. Does it make you want to do more acting?
It makes me want to make stuff where I can act in it.
Mm-hmm.
But
like write your own stuff.
Yeah, for sure. And other be in other people's stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think a lot of times when people think acting, they think you always want to be a leading man.
Yeah.
But my favorite actor is David Costable.
Yeah.
He's fucking...
Yeah. He's amazing on the show.
In everything he's in.
Breaking Bad. And
Gale.
Yeah.
He's in The Wire.
Yeah.
He's in Lincoln. He's a guy that I watch, and he's such an awesome dude. And so fucking good at what he does.
Yeah.
There's a scene in season four where I yell at Maggie Siff's character, Wendy Rhodes, and I come off an elevator, and I've never done angry on film.
Yeah.
I've never done angry. I smoke a lot of weed. I rarely do angry in real life.
Yeah.
Do you have any fucking idea what you've done? I used to think you were this idealized version of a person with all the answers and the ability to make each of us the best of who we could be. I trusted you. We all did because you charmed, manipulated, worked us to, all with that bullshit Buddha smile. And now I know that what was behind that smile wasn't some serene and wise teacher. It hid a sick, vicious phony. Now I know what you really are, a goddamn monster.
I would have to do the take, then go back in the elevator, and they'd shut the elevator doors, and then we'd reset, and we'd do it again.
Mm-hmm.
You're on a sound stage, but I was in a heavy winter coat, so I had to take my winter coat off because I was starting to sweat after yelling for 3 minutes or whatever, 2 minutes, however long the scene is. And I fake fight with Kelly O'Coin with Dollar Bill. And Costable's upstairs.
Yeah.
Right? And so no one can see
on the balcony.
On the balcony.
Yeah.
And I'm in the elevator, and he just, I'll never forget, he comes to the balcony, and I see him, and he's like, yeah. Like, he's like, that tank. You know, like.
He's coaching you from the balcony.
And I don't know if he'll ever know how important that moment was, but it was just kind of like, oh, good job. Yeah. So I'm doing this right.
Yeah.
Because I don't fucking know.
Yeah.
I have no clue.
Yeah.
I have no clue. Sometimes I have a better feeling after four seasons, kind of a better feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that kind of supportive mentality.
That's cool.
Is great. And there's a lot of great people on that show.
So I want to end with this question. When you look back on your time in comedy, who's the funniest person that you've ever worked with? Could be on a set or in the clubs.
Big J. Oakerson.
Yeah.
Big J. Oakerson is.
And what makes him?
I'm going to tear up talking about him. Yeah. I swear to God, I'm going to tear. He cried on a podcast talking about us, so maybe it's my turn to cry on a podcast talking about him. He is, you know, when you get a job or you go to a school or you go to somewhere super very uncomfortable and you're scared and you're nervous and you meet one person that just seems to be an ointment of relaxation and funny, and they just immediately you just feeling. That's Jay.
Mm-hmm.
Jay's the funniest person I've ever seen. I've said pound for pound, Joe List and Big J. Oakerson are just the funniest people I've ever been around. Mm-hmm. Shane Gillis, too.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people are you know, and they're like, he can't, he's a racist. He's so fucking funny. And I know he'll never tell this story.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get back to Jay because I could go forever on Jay. But Shane, when he was getting canceled, I had dinner with him the night he got SNL.
Okay.
Very nervous. He's like, I don't know if I want this job.
Mm.
We talk in the morning. I fly to Portland, Oregon to do shows at Helium.
Okay.
I land in Portland. He is canceled.
Yeah.
It's out. Mm-hmm. The Variety article's out.
Yeah.
Little Sethy Simons did his damage and blew up his career. I call Shane and I call his phone. It rings twice and he just picks up and goes, beep. Everyone's mad at me. And it was the hardest. What a funny reaction. The world is collapsing on you.
He found a way to have a sense of humor about it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Joe List. I hope he doesn't get mad at me saying this. Mm-hmm. We've known each other for years, and, and he's had a joke about it. But he got herpes and got on the subway with me to go in and do spots at fucking Broadway Comedy Club or Stand Up New York. I forgot where we were.
Mm-hmm.
It's like almost 10 years ago. It was 2010. And we get on the subway. And this is just how funny Joe List is. He's like, dude, I fucking, you know, his Boston accent. He's like, I got fucking herpes, dude. And I was like, oh, yeah, man. One time I had a scare. Turned out it was a pimple. And he goes, I got 40 fucking lesions on my dick right now. I got herpes. It's not a scare. It was one of the funniest things that someone was like, fuck your scare.
Yeah.
I'm actually going through it. And it's like those kind of people I love. Wolf is hilarious. Like, I could keep naming like the funniest people I know. Wolf, in between specials tapings, I've quit drinking 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And in between, I didn't like the first crowd. I didn't feel like I did well.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like my performance on the first taping. On the second taping, we got it. But on the first taping, after the show, it's just she and I in the her and I in the green room. I don't know. My English is always terrible. We're hanging out in the green room, and Michelle out of nowhere just claps her hands, and she goes, I know the problem. We got to get you hammered. And it fucking made me laugh. But that's the kind of humor that I like being around, just that people can pull it out of nowhere, and no one is better at that than Big Jay Oakerson. No one is better at taking a situation and making me laugh fucking hard.
Yeah.
We, man, the story we've been telling recently was we were in the elevator at Sirius. And I, you know, we wear headphones, and I had longer, my hair was long, and I was going to do stand-up. So I took out a little comb, and I was, like, combing my hair. And Jay's like, what are you doing? And I was like, I'm combing my hair. I had headphone hair. And it, and I'm like, feel how soft it is. And he's like, oh, my hair is softer. And it's Jay, Christine, who's Jay's girlfriend and our producer, and I in the elevator. And then Christine's, like, feeling our hair.
comparing
the hair. And then these three businessmen from NBC, which is, like, a couple floors below us, get on. And one of the guys is like, what are you guys doing? And I was like, we're saying my hair's soft. And he goes, can I touch? And he like, he touches my hair, and then touches Jay. And then another guy goes, can I touch? And then Jay out of nowhere just starts fake tapping everyone's genitals. And he goes, ooh, are we about to do this? And it was, it's just one of those things where you're like, dude, that's so funny to fake an orgy. You know what I mean? Like, it's inappropriate. Yeah. And it's like, but God damn it. He just makes me laugh. There's times where, like, man, I've laughed on the bonfire where I've never laughed harder in my life ever.
Yeah.
Like, gotten sick because I was laughing. And that's, like, if you ever get to hang out with Big Jay, you're lucky.
Yeah.
He's just that fun.
And you get to hang out with him every day.
8 hours a week. Yeah. I said 10, but I overestimated. Yeah. I don't know why I thought we'd do more work. Maybe I'm trying to get that Friday show.
Yeah.
But, man, it's like when you have that friend – he's just, dude, he's just the funniest.
Yeah. Awesome, man. Well, thanks for doing this today.
Yeah, thanks for
having me. Congrats on the new special.
We had quite the conversation.
We did.
Do you think I'm going to be canceled for it?
I don't think so.
Maybe I'll go back to Bed Bath & Beyond.
Yeah.
I was pretty good at stocking comforters.
Well, if you get canceled, that's where you can find
come
find Dan at Bed Bath & Beyond.
Don't forget our holiday sale is coming up at Bed Bath & Beyond, where you can get gifts for the whole family. Canceled Dan. I'm canceled Dan!
All right.
Yeah, dude, thanks.
Thank you again to Dan Soder for meeting up with us in New York and to Audio Boom Studios for letting us record there. You can watch Dan's new special, Son of a Gary, when it premieres on HBO this Saturday night, December 7th at 10 p.m. Eastern, and stream it on HBO Go and HBO Now after that. The Bonfire airs on Comedy Central Radio, Sirius XM Channel 95, Monday through Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 Central. If you enjoy this show, please tell your friends and rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. You can find me on Twitter at Matt Wilstein and at thedailybeast.com. And please follow @LastLaughPod on Instagram. The Last Laugh is distributed by Himalaya Media for The Daily Beast. It is produced by Jason Smith and Scott Porch for Starburns Audio and engineered and edited by Mackenzie Mazzell. Our theme music is by Claude, who you can find on Instagram at claude.mp3. You can find the show every week on Apple Podcasts, the Himalaya app, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And you can find show notes and highlights from each episode on thedailybeast.com. See you on Friday for a special bonus episode with comedian Eliza Schlesinger.